This is Wisconsin Public Radio, and for Western Wisconsin, this is Spectrum West. The arts, culture, and humanities enjoyed on the left side of the state. I'm Al Ross, the fortunate guy who gets to connect with, and better yet, come to know, the people who supply all sorts of entertainment, information, and engagement. Today, a young actress who can carry a tune a long way. So far, it's taken her to Chicago and to a prestigious theater awards ceremony. Courtney Mack joins us. Jim Oliver welcomes Adam Bowl, composer, lyricist, and Michael Cook, director. It's called The Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical, and it opens soon at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Jim will also supply a collection of what is and will be on stage for miles and miles around. David Caradori takes a moment away from his shop to observe 30 years a potter with a good story about how clay and kickwheels and wood-fired kilns became his way of doing things. But before all those noteworthy conversations, you should know or be reminded that Saturday's a big day. Saturday, the population within the village limits of Stockholm, Wisconsin, will expand as people like you and I visit for the 43rd Stockholm Art Fair, an event that goes on calendars early each year and is then enthusiastically anticipated. Linda Day works with clay. Her work is fun and popular. But for the art fair, her role is coordinator. Let's hear about all that.
I moved here close to 30 years ago and almost immediately became a volunteer and involved with the art fair. I've been the coordinator of it for about the last 9 or 10 years. The history is that when it started out, local artists, and there were a lot of people that moved to this area to do their art, just thought they would show their art in the park in Stockholm. It's a charming little park, and everyone just threw a blanket down and brought whatever they had and bartered or sold and had a good time. And that's kind of how it all started out, but it's evolved and changed quite a lot over the years. Now it's a juried fine art show.
I want to dwell on history for a while. Okay, so it's the 1970s. You're at the University of Minnesota.
I was, yeah.
What do you remember about your first ceramics class?
Oh, what do I remember? Oh, I just became addicted to it right away. It was popular in the 70s at the University of Minnesota to take ceramics, and you had to have your name drawn out of a hat in order to get into the classes. Yeah, there was a real clamor for it. Warren McKenzie was teaching there then, and he was a very popular professor. Almost as soon as I got in, I just had to keep doing more. I mean, I really loved the feel of clay.
I might have made it all the way through college if somebody had come to me and said, you know what, you need a ceramics class for perspective. You need to pretend that you're back in kindergarten again working
it's
with
fun.
Clay. You know, who knows
That's
what
why
I
you ended up in radio.
Exactly. Who knows what I would have discovered?
Who knows?
Well, let's talk about White Earthenware, which I thought would be a nice name for a band, actually.
Oh, that is a great name for a band. Well, yeah, White Earthenware, I like that.
It's kind of what you work in, right? That's your medium?
That's what I do. Yeah, I like White Earthenware. I like Red Earthenware, too, but I haven't worked in that for a long time. The ingredients to clay are many, and there's different colorants and clay bodies that go into any clay, and that determines the color. I mean, there's all kinds of ground ingredients in clay, the clay that is mined in Georgia and places like that, and people mix it up to make different clay bodies.
And you know,
I tend to buy mine and, you know, already prepared and mixed up. When we were in school, we did that all the time, and we had giant clay mixers that used to be bread mixers. That was kind of part of the fun of it, too, you know, but at this point, I like my clay to come from continental clay in little bags.
Oh, so it's shipped to you.
I go there and pick it up because it's too heavy, and I'll
Where
buy 500 pounds at a time.
So you go to buy clay. How long does that last you?
Well, for sure, a year. I mean, I don't have to buy clay very often because I'm such a slow worker.
So this is kind of like crackers? You have to keep the bag closed?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and as I was doing more research on what it is you do, I've always thought that bisque was a soup, but you do.
It is.
You do what's called bisque firing. That's B-I-S-Q-U-E. What is that?
Okay, so you make things, say I'm making a jar and a little sculpture on top. I'm going to hand build that. I roll those pieces out flat and I hand build it. I do the lid to fit the way I want it to. I do the sculpture on top. That's nothing but dried mud, hard enough so that it can be moved around and handled, but if you put water in it, it would dissolve, of course. So what you have to do is bisque fire it, and I do that higher than I glaze fire it. I just bring it up to a high enough temperature so all the water comes out of the clay and some other toxins and things, too. That way it becomes rock-like, and I can handle it and paint on it and do whatever I want. And then once you fire it, it becomes truly white, and it's just like a canvas or something, and I can paint on that.
I'm still trying to figure out the word bisque, but that's all right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why they call it bisque and why it's spelled exactly the same as the soup.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting question. I have no idea why that would be. I've never thought about it.
And I'm sorry I brought it up, because I know that you probably won't sleep now till you find out.
I have so many things to do, and I've got to solve this.
Yes.
Too. Thanks a lot.
You have to keep us in the know. On the phone with Linda Day, sometimes known as Linda Day Dunlap, a ceramicist extraordinaire. The Dunlap part is Bruce Dunlap. He's a painter, and they live in the boonies out near Arkansas. How far is it from where you live to Stockholm?
14 miles.
Hop, skip, and a jump there.
Yep.
And although it's fun to talk to Linda about just general stuff, as you can tell with our previous conversation, we're here for a purpose, and that is to talk about the Stockholm Art Fair, which is this Saturday, the 43rd Stockholm Art Fair. It has, as you might expect, art exhibits of other kinds. It has music, and it has, da-da-da-da, food.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. So the art.
We have 106 great artists come to the show from four different states. The things you would expect, I guess, at an art fair, but really a wide range of work.
And the town itself has some pretty interesting storefronts. Those will all be decked out and open with their wares
definitely.
As well, yeah.
People sometimes, when they come for the first time, are surprised at what a true village it is. It's a little river town, 66 year-round residents. It's a charming little place. Uh-huh. And there's a pie shop on the corner, good places to eat, little galleries, that kind of thing. So it's a fun town to come to. And Village Park is a beautiful tree-lined park right down by Lake Pepin or the Mississippi River.
And you have music throughout the day, or when does that start?
Yep, that's throughout the day. From 10 to 5, we have a variety of different kinds of music, regional music, and really some of the best musicians. The last act is called Hot Flashes, a group of women who sing with some brass accompaniment that they do themselves, and they're just really a lot of fun. That'll tie up the whole thing between 4 and 5 p.m.
Cool. The food part, you can get a lot of the regular stuff, but then some surprisingly good, unique food as well, I think.
Yeah, the one new food seller we have is called Community Crust, a local wood-fired pizza. And locally sourced organic food on the pieces, and it's fabulous. Many people look for the portobello mushroom sandwiches, and they grill other bratwursts as well. We have locally roasted coffee. We have chicken wraps. I mean, all kinds of different, very, very good food.
Yeah, and I think people always look for desserty kind of stuff, ice creamy stuff.
We've got cheesecake. We've got ice creamy stuff. We got everything.
Wonderful. Stockholm, Wisconsin will be buzzing from 10 to 5 Saturday. It's the Stockholm Art Fair, 43rd. So now, if people want details on the Stockholm Art Fair,
there's a website, stockholmartfair.org or stockholmartfair.com. Look at a list of the artists. Many have websites. You can look at their work, see what food is going to be there, what the music lineup is. One thing I want to mention, we do have limited parking in the park. That goes rather quickly. We also have a larger parking area up above the village, which is free parking, and there's a shuttle that goes between that parking and the park all day long, and there are signs to direct how to get up there. And we also have handicap parking right down by the park.
Linda Day, congratulations on your work as the coordinator for the last several years and for 43 years. Of course, it's not 43 yet. They have to pull it off first.
After this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be 43.
Holding our breath. Okay.
Okay, have a lot of fun. Thanks for spending
time
with us.
Thank you.
Linda Day's work won't be one of the exhibits. She has enough to do as coordinator, but let's toss out her website. It's lindadayclay.com. Fingers are crossed for perfect weather. The people of Stockholm have taken care to inject the word perfect in all the rest. The Stockholm Art Fair, Saturday. Coming up, a star on the rise whose ascent began on Western Wisconsin stages. Jim Oliver talks with two guys who make cheesy cheesier and campy campier. And next, three decades of heirloom yet functional pottery. Support for WPR comes from Simply Dunn in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Ahotel Islands Realty, dedicated to providing personalized real estate services along the shores of Lake Superior, including homes, land, and business properties. More at ahotelislands.com. Well, doing anything for 30 years is often a career. Making pottery and sustaining your lifestyle by making and selling your art is a rousing career. And when one takes joy in what he's doing while bringing joy to those for whom he makes his wares, well, consider that man fortunate. David Caraduri feels fortunate. You can see it in his eyes, hear it in his voice. Decades ago, he found his true calling while considering other possible vocations. Let's listen in about life, liberty, and the pursuit of pottery perfection. I want to take you back to 1986, which is obviously the 30 years, but we should actually go a little before that and tell me about what kind of training you received.
I went to school for 6.5 years. Well, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had like 112 credits in nursing. I got a degree in criminal juvenile counseling. I have a degree in business. But very little formal art training. My art training came between my junior and senior year in college, Eau Claire here. And I wasn't planning on it, but I had to take a class to fulfill my basic requirement in humanities. And I was just looking for the easiest class I could take, something I could get an easy A in. I was still in the nursing program. And I just thought, well, you know, when I was in high school, I said I liked making pottery a little bit. It was a summer course, so it was an abbreviated course. Gee, I'll take this course and I'll just, you know, have a nice summer. Usually my thing when I was in the nursing program, I would take a class that was difficult, like a chemistry class or something. I'd know I would pass it. Anyway, the long story short, I took this class in ceramics. The funniest thing was is that the first day I was in this class, the first thing that burst my bubble was my professor, Richard Joslin, said, "Oh, I never give A's to first-time students." What? Wow. You know, and it's just like, okay.
How about a B? That's not too bad.
Well, believe me, I needed every grade point at the time. The nursing program was very hard for me. Anyway, I was very disciplined as a nursing student. Very, you know, I studied a lot, and this was the only class I had, and so, you know, I put a lot of effort into it. And then I just noticed on a beautiful day, I got to the studio about like 8 or 9 o'clock, and then it was like 7 o'clock at night, and I'd been in the studio all day, and I never thought once, wow, it was a beautiful day. I can't wait to get out of here.
Sure.
I just thought to myself, wouldn't that be interesting to work a profession where the whole time I was in the nursing program, it was very hard. But, you know, I never really knew if I was going to like it or not. And I always thought, oh, I can't wait to get this test over so I can go out and do what normal college kids do. And when I was in ceramics, I just thought, this is it. And then, you know, by the end of the summer, I'm thinking, okay. So I talked to my friend Jim Bainey. He taught in psychology department. And I went into his office one time. Jim, I really don't like the nursing program. I really think this pottery experience, I said I had one of these epiphanies in life where you think, I really like this, you know. I was just looking for any way he would support me in this. And, you know, everybody said the same thing to me. You know, finish your degree up and then start the pottery. You know, you'll have the degree. But I knew that if I finished the degree, I would never end up doing it because, you know, you get used to making all that money and stuff. Anyway, but he said the perfect thing to me. Yeah, go ahead and do it. If, you know, if that's what you really love, if it doesn't work out, you can always go back.
Yeah, and see, that's the kind of mentor you need.
4 or 5 years, or even if I did it for a couple years and it didn't work out, you know what? I still got those credits. Brilliant advice. I mean, he was a very Socratic person. He never told you what to do, but he just said that, and I thought that's all I needed. And so I ended up going to school another year after that because I had to get a degree in something.
But what good advice. Wow.
It was brilliant.
That's wonderful.
I know.
So that's the story, and I'm glad I asked because it's an interesting story, of how pottery came to be your first love. Tell us now how, in the last 30 years, what you do has evolved. You had a process, I'm sure, at the beginning. You had preferences. You had a style. How's that all changed over the years, or has it?
Well, I have a unique style as far as if you compare myself to other artists in general or other potters. First of all, I have a interest in all types of pottery, not just the type I do, but like I'm very much interested in it. And I absolutely have like four different styles.
You really are a student of pottery and always have been.
Yes, okay, yes. I'm always reading and trying to get better and like learning stuff. But generally, an artist, whether they're a potter or a painter, they have a certain style. And once they go down that path, and it's slowly articulated, so the more years they do it, there's slow articulations on this one type of style. You can look at the person's beginning work, and you can look at their end work, and you can see that there was a progression.
Uh-huh.
But for me, first of all, I have a little store in Eau Claire on Ferry Street. You know, if I were to just choose a style like my Onagama wood-fired style, there's only a limited market for that type of work in Eau Claire, you know. And
sure.
So, well, I need something that's a little bit more bright or more elegant for some of my other types of customers. So basically, I have my strictly functional pottery that I make, coffee cups, dinnerware, casserole dishes, handmade tiles that are decorative for the wall. They're like little paintings and stuff. I have my hardcore, what I call my Japanese influence, my Onagama wood-fired, which is, you know, your menge style. You know, it's very traditional craft. And then, you know, I do like some hand building too and some sculptural stuff. And so I have all these four styles, and it worked out really nice for my store because I have a very wide variety of stuff in my store. I do sell other people's work, but at the time when I opened my business up, I needed to like sell the majority of stuff would be my own.
And you didn't have the internet back then. Now you have the ability to show your stuff quickly for people who don't have the time today to come to your store.
Yeah, I do have a website and a Facebook, but I still call myself a Luddite. I know, and that's the wave of the future, is to like have these really slick websites and you're changing stuff and these videos of you making pottery, and that's not me. I make pots the way they make hundreds of years ago. I do. I throw my pots on a kick wheel and I fire with wood. I really know that there's going to be a time and a place. I cannot ignore the whole internet thing because whenever I post something, whether it be a video, actually somebody does it for me, I get all these people saying, "Oh yeah, I'm just amazed that somebody will like hit 1,000 times on something that I posted."
Ah.
Yeah.
David Caradori is with us. He is the owner of Caradori Pottery, and he has been making pottery as a vocation and as a source of income for 30 years. And that's impressive because I heard not from David about his 30th anniversary. I heard from other people, and they said, you know, it's impressive for someone to be doing anything in the world of art for 30 years and sustaining your livelihood. So congratulations on that. Wonderful stuff. We just talked about the things you have now, which are kind of luxurious, given the internet and ways for people to see what it is you do. Plus, you also have a reputation now that people know that if they want something good or want something in a certain discipline, they go to David and see him. But you didn't have that 30 years ago, and maybe for the first 5 or 10 years, it was it a struggle?
To have another job.
Oh, yeah? Was it tough?
I worked at a halfway house at night. I'd work from like 6 o'clock at night, and then I would get done in the morning. Of course, I got to sleep there. I was just sort of like a babysitter at a halfway house. I did that, and then I would get up, go to work in the morning. I only did that for a year or two, but another thing I did that a lot of people don't know about me is I was in the National Guard for 21 years.
Well, there you go.
And because, you know, I thought, hey, you know, win, lose, or draw, I'll have some little pension.
Sure.
But, you know, let me add about one other thing. When I started out, the business had been there for like 17 years before I took it over.
The current place.
The current place. And what's interesting, what a lot of people don't know, and I don't say this so much, but
they're going to know
second,
it now, though.
It's the second oldest continuous running pottery shop in the state. There's only one pottery shop. It's Eccles Pottery up in Bayfield that's been running in the same place for, you know,
good for you,
well over 50 years.
You should have a sign, do you?
Not the second. I maybe if D.D. Eccles decides to...
Well, you want to be first before you put a sign.
And you know what? It's only been in the last 3 or 4 years. There was my old friend, Abe Cohn. He owned the Potter's Wheel up in Door County. He was up there for well over 50 years. And it's like some of these old potters. It's not something I see that gets passed down to a son or a daughter, or somebody's going to take over another pottery shop. Mm-hmm. There's a few around here, but yeah. It generally dies when the person who started it died. So... what's unique is in 3 years, the little pottery shop on Ferry Street will have been there for 50 years.
Wow.
Now, I think that's amazing.
That is amazing.
Considering even for Eau Claire, I've seen Eau Claire aptitude towards art and its supporting of the art. It's starting to like really look like it's moving in the right direction.
And we're all happy about that. One of the things that other potters that I have spoken with over the years tell me is the joy of... taking something out of the kiln and having it be a real pleasant surprise. When you pull it out, you go, oh, man, I didn't expect that.
That's a great question because especially with what I do with Japanese wood-fired kiln, or even wood-firing in general, you don't have as much control. After 30 years, you kind of get an idea, but you don't have as much control over the process. You know, there's an oxidation kiln, it's an electric kiln, and I always sort of compare that to a microwave oven. You know, you can control everything perfectly. I mean, it does take some skill, and then there's gas kilns, which is kind of, you know, like your percolator, your coffee pot. That's, you know, you can put it in there and you can mm-hmm. articulate it, but the wood kiln is like, that's the old method of doing it. Thus, the returns, like, you know, opening up a kiln, I'm always surprised. I learn... every time I open that kiln up,
that's cool.
I changed my glazes. I'm always trying to tweak things. I never get satisfied, and it is so easy. After 30 years, I've developed enough glazes where I would never have to do it again, and I could sell everything I make out of my shop. But I'm curious about things, and for me, it's trying to strive for something that's not obtainable, you know, and so it's the process that gives it meaning. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't do it because, you know, I can fire stuff out of the oxidation kiln and I can make just as much in half the time, but I love the process of doing it. I like gathering the wood and I don't like cleaning the shelves, but I like doing all the stuff, loading the kiln, firing the kiln. And it's like running a marathon. And when
how long of a process is that?
I generally... we'll preheat the kiln for 8 to 12 hours, and then I'll fire the kiln probably for 18 hours. So it's about 30 hours of firing.
Oh my.
And sometimes I can fire the kiln for another day to get higher amounts of ash deposits.
Ah.
It's like running a marathon. You know, you have to get all your wood ready. I have a crew, my friend Dan Ingersoll, used to teach at the University of Memorial. He's one on my firing team. I usually get like apprentices to come back and help me fire the kiln.
So you do this the old-fashioned way because it is you and it speaks to the results you're known for? I mean, have you ever been tempted to get the gas or the electric? Or
I've had them. I still have
them. Oh, you have them. Okay.
You know what? The older I get, the more I'm like augmenting my inventory with the oxidation kiln just because, you know, this is going to surprise people, but after doing this for 30 years, you don't have the energy you used to have. Oh, my God, what I used to do. I used to, like, teach workshops. I used to teach at the Peninsula School for the Art. I used to do art fairs and run my shop, and now I just want to just make pots just in my basement. And I have shows 3 times a year, and I try to promote local artists and give back to the community and stuff, but, you know, when it comes down to it, I just see myself procrastinating about things I want to do because I want to go downstairs and just make stuff.
Well, I think David Caradore making pots is about all we want. Again, congratulations. 30 years is quite the milestone. Does it feel like it? Did it zip by?
It makes me feel somewhat old. Oh, my God, I've been doing this longer than anything else. It sort of made me feel old, but...
nah.
Going to get re-energized.
Seasoned is the word.
Yeah. Having my 30th anniversary show on July 23rd at the shop between 5 and 6:30. You
got that plug in. Thanks for coming in. It's been fun.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
The website is caradori-pottery.com. That's Caradori. The website says it this way. Located in Shawtown, a historic neighborhood in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Caradori Pottery is on the corner of Short Street and Ferry Street. Pottery has been made on this site since 1970. And of course, the last 30 of those years, David Caradori has been making it. Quite a milestone, thanks to the artistic bird who whispered in our ear about this impressive feat. You're listening to Spectrum West. We are so thankful that you are. Spectrum Memo next up at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee, the Grand Marquis, Swingin' Blues and Roots from Kansas City. That's Saturday, July 30th, 7:30 p.m. MabelTainter.org is that website. A little bit of Rose Room playing in the background. It's become one of my favorites ever since Christian Buga pointed it out to me. You know, Jim Oliver likes to talk theater. He has experience in community theater. He gives us all good insights into what it takes to write, put on, direct, or act in productions at all the many fine venues and companies in western Wisconsin. This week, it's a trialogue. Let's see who RSVP'd to his latest invitation.
A new musical written, directed, and performed by local talent will stage its premiere run July 21st to the 24th at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. The Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical, was adapted by Christopher Mim from a 2006 monster movie by the same name that he wrote. Eau Claire composer Adam Bowl wrote music and the lyrics. The director is Michael Cook, also of Eau Claire. Welcome to both of you to Spectrum West.
Thanks for having us.
Give us an idea of the story. Adam, why don't you go ahead and do that?
Like you said, it's an adaptation of Christopher Mim's very first movie, kind of a tribute to the 50s monster movies. It's pretty faithful to that genre. Just to kind of give you a rundown of the plot, it's a really campy adaptation where some teens go camping in the woods. Another guy gets transformed into a monster by atomic waste. He starts attacking people in the woods where they're camping. Luckily, there's a professor and his graduate assistant nearby who step in to eventually save the day.
Uh-huh. The music is billed as classic musicals, 50s rock and roll and vintage science fiction. Talk about how the various styles mix.
You're going to hear all of those things. You're going to hear music doo-wop influenced. You're going to hear... one song sounds like a ballad right out of a Rodgers and Hammerstein show that you've maybe never heard before. A couple of songs in there that are surf rock inspired. Mike, any others?
There's a couple of Western tunes in there, too.
That's right.
Mm, okay. Now, these are all original tunes?
Yes. Okay. Yep. And two of them are actually from Christopher Mim's movies. He puts music in his movies every once in a while. And we took two of those, put them into the musical, kind of adapted them. And then there's another 14 or 16 songs that are originals by me.
So you wrote the music. What's the process of writing a musical for a script that's pretty much in place already?
I've never adapted one before this show. So First of all, I was pretty familiar with all of Chris's movies. And Mike has been in almost all of them, all but one, I think.
All but one. Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen a lot of them just because Mike was involved and I've gone over to see the premieres with him. So I sat down and watched the movie and kind of sketched out what the important parts were, what the dramatic scenes are, where it felt like it could use a song to make it even more exciting. And then just kind of tried to plot out what needed to happen and where, and then see where songs fit naturally.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael Cook, talk about the cast. Most of these people are from the region, is that correct?
All of them are from the region. Very, very talented cast. Cast of 10. I'm recreating the role that I had in the film. No one else is, however, but that's okay. we've got some really, really talented people. We handpicked the cast for this. They are working very hard, and they are getting their characters together. If anyone has seen the movie, the comparisons between how it was played in the movie and how it's played now, it's going to be a little bit different because I wanted them to make the parts their own, and they are doing that. The dialogue is virtually the same, but the nuances maybe and the acting styles are just a little bit different. It's really coming together. It's a whole different animal when you get down to the basics like that. The words are the same, the plot's the same, but it's a little bit different, a little bit, you know, different. That's about the best way I can say it.
Well, we are talking to Mike Cook, who is the director, and Adam Bowl, who wrote the music and the lyrics for The Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical. Mike, let's continue to talk about the cast a little bit. Are there some familiar names?
I believe that just about everybody's a local celebrity in their own right around here. Joel Breed is one of the leads. Mandy Teets. We've got Keelan Smith. We've got Seth Barrier. We've got the Kernkamps, Greg and Greta. Hannah Jones. And I'm Cassie Pearson. She'll get me for that.
And Christopher Sturz.
Christopher Sturz as well, yes.
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about how the musical compares to the film version. Are there special effects involved in this show? And talk about the set and all those kind of technical things.
Okay. The difficulty in adapting it for the stage from a movie that actually took place on a lake, you have to adapt that into a theater, you know, where's the lake, you mm-hmm. know, that sort of thing. We've got that all figured out. But the movie itself was kind of a festival of bad, cheesy special effects. We tried to make them even cheesier, and I think we're succeeding. Anyone who knows the genre for the low-budget B-films, mm-hmm. and they're called B-films because they were the second on the bill at a drive-in, and actually there are very few people who ever got that far to watch the films. But it's cheap, it's cheesy, and we tried to stay faithful to that idea of cheap and cheesy, and that's where we're going with it.
This always it fascinates me is how do you deal with a play that's supposed to involve a lake. Now, some productions of other plays have managed somehow to get water on stage. I gather you haven't gone to that extent.
Without giving anything away, no, we didn't go to that extent. We spent a long time thinking about how we were going to do this, and we came up with an answer that other plays that didn't put water on stage have come up with, and I think it works just fine.
Uh-huh. Well, Adam Ball, there's a dirty little secret in the arts, and that is somebody's got to pay for it. And so I'm always interested, this being an original production, I am assuming somebody had to scare up some money for this, unless you have a billionaire patron of the arts handy. Well, I suppose you had to.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have one of those billionaires handy, but we're really lucky because we have over 100 people who stepped in to fund it in some part. Mm-hmm. And some of those donations were $5 or $10. And we had a corporate sponsor who gave $3,500. So mm-hmm. we were very lucky. And a lot of people fall somewhere in between there. Some of the cast members are supporting us and the orchestra members and people on the production team, many of their friends and family, and then a few people who are just interested in musicals or the monster movie genre, fans of Christopher Mims films. So it's kind of a whole bunch of different people who have stepped in to help fund it. And with that money, we were able to put together an original cast recording, which is really exciting. That'll be available at the premiere. We'll also be recording the live show, and Christopher Mim will be editing and producing a DVD available afterwards. Mm-hmm. And we have a songbook with all of the music professionally printed. It's like something that you would pick up in one of the local music stores. We did all those things, and we're producing the live show. So we did it on a budget, but mm-hmm. it should come together really well.
Sounds good. Is this going to be done again? I mean, this is the premiere, so have you got bookings on other places to run
well,
the show?
We haven't approached other people with it yet, but we've heard interest from a couple of people who have said that they'd like to know more about it. Hopefully, in the future, the way that we went about putting together a cast recording and really fine-tuning the script and all of those things, we would love to have some other groups put this show on after our premiere. So the options are out there, and we definitely have all the materials for them if they choose to do it.
Has it been published yet?
We are basically self-publishing it. It's actually, you can get it on Amazon, but it's through a self-publishing company. So we're going to go with that route for now just because we have a little more control over it and we feel like we can market it better. But we'll see.
Well, I'm bouncing around an awful lot here, but that's the way I do things, I guess. The music, you have a large pit orchestra, and who's your musical director and all of that?
Luke Otto is our vocal director, and he's been working with the cast since we put the cast recording together. Mm-hmm. And Erica Svano is stepping in. She's a teacher at Augsburg College, and she's got her doctorate in conducting, and she'll be conducting the orchestra for the live show. I conducted it for the cast recording, but there's a little bit more music, so she's taking on that role for the live production. 14-piece orchestra, and a lot of the people in the orchestra actually play more than one instrument. So I believe a couple of the people play 3-4 different instruments in the show. A good challenge for them, too.
Well, Mike Cook, I was remiss in asking about who the people are who are handling the technical aspects of the show, aside from yourself, I suppose.
Well, Michelle Langhow, who has been my assistant in many shows that I've directed in the past, is is stepping into that role, and she's just taking the bull by the horns and leading it where it needs to go. And we've got Sherry Gallinati, who is actually a longtime friend of Chris Mims and a friend of mine from the films, who has a master's degree in lighting and technical design from Ohio State University. University. Got to say that in front of that. And she's doing the technical aspects, the lighting design, and a lot of the set design. Adam here is doing a lot of set designing as well. He's got some interesting ideas about things he wants to get accomplished there, and I think it'll be really, really cool. Those are the main folks working on the technical aspects right now.
Well, the play is The Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical. It runs July 21st to the 24th at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. We've been talking to Eau Claire composer Adam Bowl, who wrote the music and the lyrics, and the director, Michael Cook. Tickets for the show are available online at www.monsterofphantomlake.com. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. And support for WPR comes from the 43rd Annual Stockholm Art Fair on the shores of Lake Pepin in Stockholm, Wisconsin. Juried art, original music, and more. This Saturday, the 16th, from 10 to 5 in the Village Park. More at stockholm-art-fair.com. You know, each week I hear the collective curiosity of Western Wisconsin wondering what's on stage all over our territory. With more answers, here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage The Emperor's New Clothes July 21st and 22nd at the Oxford Theater. The Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will present The Hobbit July 21st to the 23rd. The show will be available for groups on July 22nd. The musical Something Big will be staged through July 23rd at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. The mystery spoof, A Little Murder Never Hurt Anybody, will be performed Friday through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Clue the musical plays Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon, staged by the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Performances will be given at the Taylor's Falls Memorial Community Center. The show continues in repertory through August 14th. The festival will also stage Noel Coward's Private Live Saturday afternoon. It will continue in repertory until August 21st. Performances will be staged in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The festival's So Good repertory troupe will perform at 9 p.m. Friday in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater. The Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical, will play July 21st through the 24th at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Performances at the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Monona will include Georama Friday evening and Wednesday afternoon, As You Like It this evening, Thursday, Sunday afternoon, and Tuesday evening, and Julius Caesar Friday afternoon and Saturday evening. The Great River Road Theater will present The Little Mermaid through Sunday in Town Square Park in Prescott. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Well, here's a bit of the song 17 from Heathers, the musical.
Fine, or damaged, really damaged, but that does not make us wise. We're not special. We're not different. We don't choose who lives or dies. Let's be normal. See bad movies. Sneak a beer and watch TV. We'll bake brownies or go bowling. Don't you want a life with me? Can't we be 17? That's all I want to do. Thank you.
Heathers the Musical is a rock musical based on a 1988 cult film of the same name. It premiered in Los Angeles in 2013, had an off-Broadway stint in 2014, and this past spring was produced in Chicago, starring Courtney Mack in the lead female role of Veronica. In her formative years, Courtney called Menominee, Wisconsin, home. She's been in the city of Big Shoulders for a few years, having earned a musical theater degree from Columbia College there. She says it's taking her a while getting comfortable with the bustling Chicago theater scene, but that's easing a bit now that she's a Jeff Award winner. That's the Windy City version of the Tony. She recently won the award for Best Actress in a Principal Role Musical. The singing talent was noticed and maybe nurtured early, and acting was added to the mix along the way. Am I close?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up always singing, getting yelled at in the shower because I was singing too loud. My dad, he's a podiatrist, and he like walks into his patient's rooms singing. So I kind of get that from him. And my grandma, she sings for church all the time. And my sister was in like the musicals in high school and choir, and I wanted to do what my sisters did.
So then, what, dancing came along for the ride? That's something you had to learn later because of a role or what?
Oh, goodness, no. I didn't actually take dance classes until college. My first musical was Guys and Dolls in high school, my freshman year. And, you know, I did some dancing in those high school shows, but never anything like like tapping or
sure.
Real musical theater dance. I didn't learn that until I got to college.
Yeah, high school choreography isn't too challenging because they realize that you're also trying to memorize lyrics and memorize lines. And well, good. See, you're a triple threat. In your list of roles on your theater bio, there are things like Menominee Theater Guild, the Mabel Tainter, Eau Claire Children's Theater. It's very possible on your bio that some of these were things that you performed in, what, during the summer?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Okay. I worked at the Children's Theater for a couple summers, and I don't know why I didn't do it earlier. Once I did it, I fell in love with it. So I went back, and I wish I could still go back, but now that I'm more professional, can't really do those community things anymore.
But you're non-equity, right?
I'm non-equity, yes.
That's what I thought I read about the award. I mean, and they separate those, do they?
Yeah, they do. But the first show that I was in after college was Sideshow, and that was an equity show.
Mm.
And then the next show that I'm going to be in, Mamma Mia, that's also an equity show.
There's the Union AFTRA, which is the American Federation of TV and Radio Artists. There are equity actors. There are SAG Awards, Screen Actors Guild. And it used to be that once you were a union member, it was tough to go back. But it sounds as if you can go back and forth nowadays.
I've had a bunch of teachers and actor friends who have told me you don't want to turn equity too soon. I may not be equity, I'm EMC, but I get points. Once I get enough points, then I can turn into equity if I want to.
Tell us, Courtney, about the Chicago theater scene. Well, you went to college there, so you were sort of acclimated to living in the metropolis. Now that you're out of college, does Chicago seem bigger and scarier, or is it are you still comfortable there?
Actually, it's not as scary or intimidating as I thought it was going to be. When I first came here, it was very intimidating. I was at Luther College to begin with.
Oh, yeah, there's no difference between Decorah and Chicago.
No. So I was very nervous, and I didn't really audition. Actually, I didn't audition for anything outside of school. I was shy and scared. But once I was in my first professional show, which was Sideshow, I met so many wonderful people. Then I was in Heathers, and, you know, there's people from Sideshow that were in Heathers with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the community is so tight-knit. Everybody knows everyone. So it really doesn't seem that big once you, like, do one show and then another show. And
the run of Heathers that you were in ran, this past February through April?
So we had rehearsals starting in, like, January through close to the end of February, and then we started in March and then ended in April. The whole process was about 4 months, but then the run of the show was about 2 months.
And what was your performance schedule?
We had 5 or 6 a week. I don't know if you know the show at all, but my character, she never really leaves the stage. So it was a lot physically and emotionally, and it was a lot.
Yeah, you play a teenager in that. It's kind of a rock musical. Now, when you auditioned for Heathers the Musical, did you go into those auditions with Veronica in mind, or did they just place you there?
My music director from Sideshow, he recommended my name to the people who were putting it on.
Okay.
So then I got an invitation to come and audition. I went and auditioned. I had a lot of people tell me I was right for that part and that role. And then I got a call back for Veronica.
Cool.
Didn't really feel that great about my audition because I was very sick.
Oh.
But I got it.
Is Veronica something that you might play again, or is it just one of those things that you move on from now?
It is very hard to play, and I think I've already kind of found a way to, you know, maintain my health and sanity throughout it. So I would love to play it again.
We're on the telephone with Courtney Mack, and she is a Menominee native, and she has sprouted wings as an actress and as a singer because she is the most recent recipient of the Jeff Award, Top Actress in a Principal Role / Musical, for her role as Veronica in the musical Heathers, the musical in the dinky little town of Chicago. The cast of Heathers on the website is 21 beautiful people. You can see the anticipation in all of those 21 beautiful young people's eyes, but it's that collage that reminded me of the dog-eat-dog world of making it in theater. Now, as you well know, you're not the only one with dreams. Does this award, the Jeff Award, which is kind of likened to Chicago's Tony, do you feel like it has or will open some doors for you?
That's what people have been telling me. I'm very humbled and honored that I got an award, but I still have to work just as hard as everybody else. I still go to auditions. I still work very hard to maintain what's happening next. I still have that fear. Just because I got an award, it doesn't mean that I'll have a year where I may not do anything in theater.
Sure.
I still have to work very hard.
It's not like winning an Academy Award where you sit back and wait for people to come to you.
No.
No. And I noticed that Heathers, the play that you were in, the musical, also won for choreography. That's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Very fun 80s kind of Paula Abdul-styled choreography, which was very fun to do.
So now in your short bio on the Cokandy Productions website, you thank family and friends for their love and support. That's pretty key stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. My family had to kind of deal with me through the whole process, just because it was a very stressful time, because it took a toll on my body. It took a toll, like, mentally. And because it took place in a high school, like, I didn't really have to try that hard to relive these moments because I already had dealt with them in my real life, in a sense. And they're very supportive. I'm kind of the odd one of my family because they're all doctors, and so I'm kind of the weird one.
Well, yeah, you dissect roles. You make people feel better when they come to the theater.
That is true.
There you go. See, I like the way I just twisted that around. Courtney Mack on the phone with us. The Jeff Awards, named after Joseph Jefferson, who was, I guess he was one of the first actors of note in Chicago back in the 19th century. That's pretty cool. Was this award on your radar at all? As you were playing the role of Veronica, did you say to yourself, you know, I could win a Jeff here? Or did that just sort of blindside you?
I never really had that thought. There were a lot of people and even some reviews that said, like, she needs to win or be nominated.
Hmm.
I was very focused on the show.
Sure, sure, sure.
So it didn't really come into my mind.
I think you'd probably like to just make a brief comment about Columbia College, because you have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Musical Theater from Columbia in Chicago. Was it paramount in preparing you for this kind of success? Do you feel well prepared because of Columbia?
Yes. And no, I definitely feel that they gave me the push that I needed. So but I was very shy. Like, they can't really prepare me for the real world until I experience it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was very shy in college. I kept to myself. I wasn't in a main stage production there until my senior year. I was in Into the Woods, directed by Sheldon Patinkin.
And you played Cinderella.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite roles I've played.
That's a fun play to be in. Again, congratulations on the Jeff Award. I think it's pretty prestigious in your circle, and Chicago is no slouch when it comes to producing good theater. I think you're on your way. As that way continues, I hope that you keep in touch with us here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and I hope we get to talk to you again maybe after, what, a Tony?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
No, I can tell that your ego hasn't been falsely inflated simply because you won an award. That's good. You sound grounded and centered, and I wish nothing but the best for you going forward.
Thank you very much.
Courtney Mack, you might want to remember this conversation just to be able to say, hey, I knew her when. Had some time for some Spectrum memos. The Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory presents a writer's forum, original stories, poems, and essays from the literary publication the Northern Lakes Center puts out called Soundings. That's Saturday at 7:30. Shell Lake Arts Center presents world-renowned pianist Miriam Avalos-Tai in concert Sunday at the Daryl Aderman Auditorium in Shell Lake. That's 7 p.m. Chill on the Hill, Heidi Center, Chippewa Falls features chalk art with Robin Kelly next Tuesday the 19th at 11 a.m. Summer Cinema, Wednesday evenings on the lawn at the Haas Fine Arts Center, UW Eau Claire. Next Wednesday, the film is The Jungle Book. Don't forget Tuesday Night Blues, Owen Park in Eau Claire. Next Tuesday, it's Howard Guitar Lidke and Blue Max. Oh, yeah. We'll be back next week to talk about photographing our impressive national parks. The classic Gigi summer musical is in final rehearsal. And I don't think Christopher Columbus made it to western Wisconsin, but his ships have. We'll talk with today's captain. Thanks, DB, DK, and EC, who make this EC. I'm Al Ross. Spectrum West. Bye now.